Welcome to Essential Dynamics. I'm your host, Derek Hudson. Excited to be here today with my colleagues from Unconstrained, Tiz Benvenuto and Dave Kane. Tiz and Dave, welcome to Podcast World.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thanks very much, Derek.
This is a long time coming, so I'm super excited to have you guys on. You've been behind the scenes. We've had our other colleagues, Glenn and Ann, out recently. And it's exciting to have you on. So Essential Dynamics podcast is an exploration of the Essential Dynamics framework, which we've been working on. The podcast is brought to you by Unconstrained, our consultancy. And what we're endeavoring to do is help people work through tricky problems. And on the podcast, we explore the principles of Essential Dynamics through deep conversations with interesting people. So today, my interesting people are Tiz and Dave, and maybe we can just start with a quick introduction. Tiz, all I'm asking you is, what excites you about talking about things like Essential Dynamics?
What excites me is about up-leveling the human experience. I think time is short, and let's just be the best we can be and do the best we can.
That's fantastic. Dave, what excites you?
I just really enjoy the conversations because once you get into them, people very easily step up a level and they look at things from a higher level. And then afterwards they go, well, that just makes sense. But it's just being able to ask the right questions and get them up there and a little light bulb going off. So,
yeah. And that's, I think how I, you know, came into Essential Dynamics was I was trying to understand how I solve business problems. And as I sort of documented, you know, the way I think about things and Essential Dynamics unfolded it, I realized that it is primarily a way to think about systems and a way to think about systems at a higher level than we usually do. And so I'm excited to have this conversation today. We're still in our theme about business traditions that must stop now. So I want to put the topic out there. The business tradition that I want to challenge today is this idea that we can design incentive compensation schemes to get people to bring their best into organizations. I think that that's, use these words. I think it's lazy. I think it's a cop-out. And I think it doesn't actually work. But we got more voices today. So Tiz, what do you think about elaborate incentive compensation schemes?
I think they're a great go-to for what feels like a quick fix. But at the end of the day, you hit a point where you're totally off the mark. It's not going to get you what you think you're trying to get. And I think that's an important element as well. It's the perspective of getting.
Okay. Can you say more about the getting?
Well, when you ask me that question, I think of an environment that is, we need something more. Something's not happening the way we were hoping. So let's throw a Band-Aid at it because we're not getting what we need to get, whether it's more to the bottom line or more off the production line or whatever the case may be. It's very much a get perspective. It's viewing what we show up to do as all about the end product or the end whatever, and not really considering the interrelatedness of the system with this component that's super important, which is the people and really what makes people tick, what motivates behavior, what gets results that we ultimately hope from this system that includes people. But taking a full-on perspective from getting is, I think, where the problems start.
Well, I'm going to bounce this over to Dave because I know Dave has some opinions on even the concept of human resources.
What? No, I think I'm okay with the idea of designing the incentive comp to bring their best. Where I find it breaks down is when you take it to an individual level, right? When you take it down to a personal rather than a team, I think that's where the incentive starts to fall apart, because it starts to bring about sort of unfavorable or undesired outcomes, I think. But if you're to do it at the right level where you're incentivizing the system, that may work, but most people don't go that route, right? They use the incentive plan to try and take its place of performance management conversations. It's like, I'm going to try and get your attention onto something by putting a dollar sign beside it.
Well, and my experience is that except for very, very specified systems where there's no sort of no variation is tolerated, which isn't the environment I've ever worked in. You can't design an incentive system that will run your process optimally anyway. And then when you pit people against each other, in a sense, in the individual component, then you're hooped. And I'll just give an example back from my days when I did work in a manufacturing organization. And that's from time to time, we had these things called mini bonuses. And a mini bonus was like $100 bill, which is kind of a problem for accountants, because you got to pay people $130 to give them $100 bill. The accounting for it was way more troublesome than it was ever worth. But, you know, if we make this number for the quarter, then everybody gets a mini bonus. And to the extent that was for everyone, then the system kind of gets optimized. But there was a situation once where a salesperson wanted a particular order shipped, and it wasn't necessarily the top of the production queue. And he went in to the team and he said, if you guys ship this by the end of the quarter, I'll buy everybody pizza. And now we had competing incentive systems going on in the organization. So I just feel like you could spend a lot of time designing a system to try and give people the signals they need to do the thing that you need them to do, or you could teach people the system. And for other reasons, which we'll get into, if the people want the system to work well, you know, they'll figure out the steps. But I just don't know the management's smart enough or flexible enough to design an individual reward system that's going to get good performance. I think I read somewhere that the only thing you know for sure about an individual performance system is that you will motivate the behavior that maximizes the return for the people.
Yep.
Which says nothing about maximizing the return for the system.
No, I agree with that. And then in my experience, not necessarily on the manufacturing side, everything's always been sort of team-based deliverables, or it's everybody's contributing to an outcome. And then they try to bring in the incentive for the individual. And it just seems like they were told that they had to bring it in, but it's impossible to incent the individual well enough that you're going to get the outcome you desire. It's just, I've seen a breakdown in two or three organizations I've been in.
Absolutely. You know, and the example that I go to sort of obviously is the idea of a commission sales structure. And I've, in an organization where the salespeople are selling stuff you don't already have, then they're selling a promise and a specification, which, you know, at some level might be challenging for the organization. And they might also sell it at a price which might not be profitable for the organization, but can move the sale along. And they get their piece of it. And then the rest of the organization is stuck with trying to deliver something that wasn't priced well and was specified beyond the capabilities of the team to deliver. And when I push on that, I think what people tell me is, well, that's the only reason that these salespeople will work. You know, they don't get out of bed unless they're chasing a commission. And I have a trouble understanding that that's the only way to do it.
I'd agree with you, because that's just looking at one element of a system. And that's the benefit of looking at the system as a whole, so that you are incenting where it needs to be incentive. But I'd like to go back to your comment about maximizing return for the people. And I'm not sure if I'm taking this too far off, but maximizing the return for the people can come with a massive assumption that you happen to know what that is. And I'd like to suggest that, again, pull me back if I'm going too far. People like to understand what the purpose is. They like to have a purpose. Maybe I'm broad sweeping here, but they like to have a purpose and a sense of belonging. So if we are communicating and ensuring a deep understanding of what we're all here to accomplish and how we each play a part in that, I think that that begins the understanding of how we maximize the return for our people. And I'd venture to suggest that that return is different in different components of the system, still relating to the people.
I appreciate that. Let's go back even further then, because we're in episode 89 of the Essential Dynamics podcast. And in the first five or six episodes, we set out the basics of Essential Dynamics. And I'm just going to revisit that very quickly to put this all in context. So Essential Dynamics suggests that things that we do as an organization can be viewed as if it was an epic quest. And one of the, and we do, you know, we think of that because quests are hard and the work that we do in organizations is hard. And sometimes we feel like we're being cheated because it's hard, but it's actually real. That's really the point, is we do hard things because that's what, you know, brings the value, or as Tiz is saying, sort of elevates the experience for everyone. And so we broke down this idea of a quest into three elements. There's the purpose of the quest, the problem that you're trying to solve, the benefit you're trying to bring. There's the path that the journey takes, which is the systems and processes that are used to achieve the purpose. And then there's the people involved. Mm-hmm. And I always like to look at the people separately from the system. Now, the people work in the system and there are steps that they take. But unlike all of the other resources in a system, the people are people. And they have their own autonomy. They have their own individual goals. And somehow we get them to sign up with us on the journey. And mm-hmm. I think we have to respect the fact that people have signed up for this journey for, you know, all kinds of different reasons. And when we work together to achieve the purpose, the system's going to go much better. So what is it about the people? What do the people need? And they need to get paid in a business system where we're talking about employees, they need to get paid. But I don't think pay is the only signal, and it's certainly not the only motivator. Would you agree with that?
Totally. Totally. I think there's research out there that actually pinpoints some number as well, that after which it's there's diminishing returns.
And I've spent a lot of time on incentive pay systems or even just compensation in general, trying to work really hard to have it not be demotivating. Mm-hmm. And it certainly can, there's lots of ways it can be demotivating. I think the limit to how much motivation it can provide is not very far away. Dave, what's your experience?
No, I just agreeing with that. I think you want to make compensation, you know, I think it's usually they say just above average, but you want to make it so it gets to a point where it stops not being an issue, I think, right? It's salary isn't a motivator, but the compensation can become a demotivator. Right. So you just want to make it not a demotivator, because in your analogy, just as you're sort of saying it, in all the stories I read, those who are along the epic quest that are solely there because they're going to get compensated for it usually aren't the characters that make it to the end, right? Some sort of awful thing happens to them. And I think it's right. There are other values or other things that are pulling people along through these quests. And it's that motivation. It's that their own self reward, I think, that sort of draws people along to reach the success.
Well, and there's no end to what you can do when people are all in. And I think that's where we want to go with our next episode. So in this one, I still want to understand why this tradition, why this culture is there that, you know, we're going to motivate people with pay. Like that just seems like the culture. And I'll just share one experience that I've had more than once. I feel I've been very fortunate to work with highly motivated people. And from time to time, usually this comes from the board level, we've been pressed to have some kind of an individual incentive plan. And in conversations, at some point I push back and I say, I don't know if I can get more from these people. Like they're all in now, and they're not all in because of any compensation structure. They're in because of how they identify with what the organization is doing. And I think it's kind of insulting to say that if I pay them 10% more, I can get 10% more out of them.
Kind of manipulative.
Have you run into that kind of thinking? And like, why do people think that way?
I'm not sure I have a useful answer, but you know what it makes me think of is parenting. We've all either had a parent or maybe done some parenting, and maybe we've picked up some of that there. You want something done? Here's what I'm going to give you if you do it, kind of thing.
Well, and I guess in some sense, at the time, if I can arrange for a transactional approach, if I buy, maybe somebody's selling and maybe I can get what I'm looking for.
Yes. Yes, that's true. My gosh.
It's also easier. I mean, it's easier for management to bring in, and it's easily viewed by the board or those above them of seeing action being done that is hopefully going to lead to a result. Whereas trying to, you know, improve engagement, that is certainly not something that is brought in as easily and as seen and measured as quickly, right?
Yeah, I think it's maybe a proxy for good management. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I think about, and maybe talk about this for a minute, is the other, it's kind of the carrot and the stick. So we've been talking a lot about the carrots and how they only work to some point, but you think about maybe accountability as the stick. You know, you can have a good system where people know where they fit and do the work, or you can try and whack them when they step outside the line with some sort of accountability. I don't know that accountability, I think sometimes accountability is also a substitute for a good system. And by accountability, I mean, let's figure out who we can blame when stuff goes wrong, or micromanage the individual steps when what we really need to do is see to the results of the system. What are your thoughts on that?
As I hear you speak of this, I still go back to my concept of a mindset of getting it. It's to me, it still sounds like viewing the people component of a system as just one of the other resources, and resources from the perspective of, you know, like machinery, which screw do I need to tighten for it to work more efficiently or better or consistently, et cetera. It's coming from that same sort of, what can I do to it? What can I get from it? And just viewing people as a resource, which when you said to Dave, I know you have opinions on human resources. Well, just that name, human resources, kind of sometimes makes my hair stand on end as well, because I did really start my career many moons ago with this naive concept that was all about the people. But it doesn't appear to be.
Yeah. When I think about essential dynamics and the purpose and the path and the people, for the first little while, I thought anything human resources related was in the people part. And as I thought it through more, I realized that anything in the human resources department part is 100% in the system.
Exactly.
And the people is another consideration. And I don't know if you can systematize the approach to people, but it's treating people as a machine that need to be adjusted is not the way I want to be thinking about people.
And you ask, where did that come from? Well, maybe part of that comes from in the educating of leaders and managers, and you know, your education, you kind of learn things this way. Wouldn't you say that in more recent times, and some of it, dare I say the five-letter word, COVID, but it shifted a whole bunch of things, and people got a different flavor of how they might be able to do their work, and then started to make way more noise about what's important to them and how they can still belong and be a part of something and really engage in a specific purpose, but do it in a different way, in a way that really maximizes their return as a component, an essential element of the entire system, but speaking to what really is important to them, and that they're not just a resource. They're not a piece of equipment.
I can't argue with that. You guys, we're hoping for the contrarian view, but
you don't just have to argue. You can enlighten. Okay. I'll put a little survey here as we wind up. Dave, have you been treated as a resource in the past?
Oh, through the career? Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Or at least the perception from being the worker of what management is doing towards me is, yes, I'm being treated as a resource because of, you know, the simplicity of, well, let's just put in an individual performance measure instead of, you know, let's give them the autonomy, let's give them the picture, let's let them contribute to the greater good here. Nope, stay in your lane, do your task. And it's a reflection from what those are putting on you or pushing down towards you.
Yeah, and you could be a robot at that point in terms of the latitude you're given.
Yeah, exactly, and it feels like that occasionally has been the expectation of management along the way, right?
So. Yeah. Yeah, so Tiz and I started, first several years of our formative years of our career as auditors at big accounting firms. Talk about feeling like a cog in the wheel, hey, Tiz?
Absolutely. That's a machine that I didn't even wake up to until I was in it, that it was just a machine to get you through, the various steps of your defined development, and then on you go. I felt like part of the production line.
So there was a win-win in there. And the way I looked at it is I get to learn about companies and they have to answer my questions. But whenever I thought about, the whole process, it didn't feel very human. And I don't know. So here's the thing. Since then, I've only really been involved in knowledge work. And my boss has never been able to tell me what to do. And in fact, my boss has never known what I should do. When I was in management consulting, so after my early years at Pricewaterhouse, I very quickly got to a point where I had learned some things that my boss, didn't know how to do. And then when I left to go into industry and I'm the chief financial officer, well, my president wasn't the chief or financial officer, right? I was expected to be the expert in that area. And so no one could tell me what to do. And there was no transactional human resource system that could ever, deliver that. But I work with scientists and engineers and marketing people, creative people, my whole career. And you can't be smart enough to tell them what to do. So you have to design systems that help them bring that, as I think Tiz, you were saying at the beginning, like their best offering, their best self, their best value, to bring that. And it's you can't create a transactional system to do that, I guess is my conclusion today. Any final thoughts?
I have one little saying that I really like to kind of keep things in perspective. And when we are looking to make changes, organizations don't change. It's people that change. And so if we're looking for something to be better or different, I think the wisdom is in the people.
The wisdom is in the people. That might be the title. I don't know. We'll see. If maybe it's the title for the next one. Dave and Tiz, thanks very much for being on this podcast, for the conversation. Our time's up. I'd just like to highlight that all three of us work at Unconstrained. Unconstrained supports brings the Essential Dynamics podcast to the world. And you can find us at getunconstrained.com. I'd like to thank Bryn Griffiths for his help in making us, as we like to say, sound better than we look. And I'm really excited for this conversation about this angle on the Epic Quest. And so until next time, consider your quest.